This podcast is brought to you by fin24.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the fin24.com Entrepreneurs Podcast, done in conjunction with Sesame Bank. My name is Mark Ashton, and this week I'm joined in studio by Colette Samanowitz from MBA Connect, Douglas Kruger, who has a very impressive resume, so to speak. He's an author, a speaker, and then I've got Gavin Samanowitz from getagreatboss.com and blockbusterinnovation.com. And on the line, we're joined by David Shapiro from SASFIN. Colette, this month we're talking about the impact of the economic crisis, changing playing fields for entrepreneurs, small business. Your event caught my eye simply because it had a very quite a broad-ranging panel. Maybe just some thoughts as to what went into putting together the event, what you were thinking, and maybe sort of an outline theme.
Well, just to give you a bit of background, MBAConnect.net is a social network aimed at MBA students and alumni from all business schools in South Africa and worldwide. So part of what we do is we facilitate and organize events like this for MBAs and members of the public at that same management level. So our thinking was, a lot of MBAs, when they leave the MBA, one of the things they miss the most is the high-level interaction of the MBA. So we wanted to have an event which allowed them to catch up on that high-level interaction, to recreate it, to gain the networking, and also to allow them to catch on the latest business thinking trends in across a wide range of business subjects. So we approached leading speakers from South African top schools in South Africa, as well as from industry across a wide range of subjects, so strategy, innovation, finance, leadership, and more. And that's really how we've compiled the lineup and put this event together.
David, maybe I want to start with you. You're talking on the business South Africa over the next 5 years, the business landscape. Maybe some thoughts on, you know, are there reasons for South African entrepreneurs to be quite upbeat about the prospects?
I think in an international environment, yes. I think if you look at where the world economy is going to be in 5 years' time, it's going to be significantly bigger than it is at the moment. Of course, no one knows what's going to happen in the short term. Expect volatility. No one, you know, 2 weeks ago, no one thought that Egypt would erupt. But these have happened before. It's nothing new in the environment. This is nothing new in the world. But I think that, understand that I am a stockbroker, I'm a money manager, I buy shares. So I don't build businesses, but I buy other businesses, and I invest my clients' money in businesses. And that's what governs my thinking. So if we look at the next 5 years, I'm not going to tell you any rocket science, but of course it's going to be dominated by the huge, enormous growth that we're seeing in emerging markets, particularly China, India, Russia. And if you look at China, China is going to be 70% bigger than it is at the moment, probably India by a similar amount. You know, in other words, I'm not saying per annum, but that's the size that it's going to be. You're probably going to see Brazil 40%. South Africa, unfortunately, is lagging. You know, and to me, it remains a concern. But for a businessman in South Africa, you have to be focused on where global growth is going, what products they're going to demand, and how best we can be suited, or how best we can be placed to actually supply into this glowing global demand. Locally as well, to me, there are a few issues here, but you can do it. You know, I'm not concerned about competition issues here. I'm talking in terms of skills and other issues. I think South Africans have always been entrepreneurial. They've always been able to adapt to the global environment. And we have some incredibly good international companies, whether it's breweries, whether it's the Naspers, British American Tobacco, Richemont, you know, all have South African roots.
You mentioned competition then. That's something I want to look at. We've obviously had a lot in the construction industry this week, announcements from the Competition Commission. You're also quite closely attuned to the financial services sector. We've seen all this talk in the international markets about breaking up big corporate banks, insurance, financial services businesses that have been so tightly integrated and have often contributed to a non-competitive environment. Do you think we're going to see an opportunity for smaller businesses to start genuinely taking market share from these bigger competitors?
Oh, no doubt, because you're much more flexible. It comes... there are problems. Let's go back to the construction industry. We don't know what the Competition Commission is looking into, and that will start coming out as the days go by. You know, no one's quite sure why they have adopted this attitude and whether they've really got something to grip onto. Although I must say, one or two of the companies are on their knees begging for mercy and begging for leniency. But one of the reasons that companies get together is, in many cases, a lot of construction companies get together on big contracts, is because they sometimes want to offset the risk, and also they need maybe the skills that someone else has got. You know, they haven't got all of those skills within their own environment. And throughout the history of South Africa in big construction products, you've had a number of companies together, you know, doing joint ventures. Now, whether this has been interpreted as being anti-competitive, I'm not sure. But therein lies something as well. You need, if you're going to compete in an international environment, you need sometimes a critical mass. And if I've got one criticism about the Competition Commission here is that, you know, they tend to be very focused on local companies and trying to break them down and prevent them becoming large. But you need, you know, the one thing you need is to be big with a big capital base and a good revenue base in order to compete. So from that point of view, you know, I'm in favor of big. What about, you know, does this in the breakup of banks that we're probably going to see internationally, does that give us kind of some kind of competitive edge? Well, I belong to a little company, SASFA, you know, which has made its money through taking a niche in the market and becoming a specialist in this, something that the big banks can't do. So I'm sure if you use that same example, there will be little opportunities for smaller businesses to do very, very well in some kind of breakup.
Doug, I want to bring you in here. David mentioned Egypt, and obviously we've seen a lot of the social media hype around things like Twitter and Facebook. You know, we've had it in Tunisia, we've seen it in Egypt, various places in the Middle East. Technology has without a doubt changed the way that small businesses can compete against large businesses, large corporates. You're talking on the subject of how to position yourself as an industry expert. Thoughts on whether or not, you know, what are the opportunities there for small businesses?
You're absolutely right in the sense that social media makes us more agile, and it also levels the playing field to a large extent. And what it really comes down to, I talk about in the idea of positioning yourself as an expert, thought leadership models. And thought leadership is actually fairly simple for anyone to carry out within their industry, but it does take a little bit of a bold, venturesome spirit. You actually have to get on onto those social media and onto things like interviews and so on, and put your thoughts and ideas out there boldly. You have to boldly venture out into the mist. But when you go about these things, the simple structures that you can use, let's take thought leadership as an example. You ask yourself, what was in the past, what is now, what is likely to be, and what can we do about it? And then, of course, for the entrepreneurial company, there's an underlying message of, therefore, follow me. And it's amazing how easily you can use that structure in things like speeches, podcasts, whatever kind of social media you might actually use. It's a simple structure, but it works in positioning yourself as an expert.
We were just chatting about it a little bit off air. I mean, there's sometimes a bit of a cynical approach to, you know, social media has basically allowed anybody to stand on a soapbox, throw their name around, and, you know, some people get it right, some people get it wrong. What is it that you've seen that's given small businesses competitive edge using these tools?
Consumers are very quick to notice real value and to sift through what is advertising and what is actual value. And I really think that thought leadership in social media comes down to how much you're willing to give. And the human mind is tuned to respond to honest giving. There will always be a sort of a message or some degree of advertising and marketing behind your giving. But the more pure, the more honest the value that you give to your market, the more they will respond to you. And not only will they start to sort of notice you as a competitor in your industry, but they start to think of you as a leader, because the person giving the information is the one perceived to be the thought leadership within an industry. So the simple summary of that idea is give good value.
Colette, I'm going to put you on the spot quickly. I mean, you've obviously had quite a lot of interaction with the MBA community. Any thoughts on what's changed in the last couple of years in terms of the way your community, for instance, has used social media to communicate and exchange ideas?
Well, on the one hand, you've got the people who would have been a lot more silent, a lot less vocal, who are now able to put their voice out there. But within the MBA community, strangely enough, because obviously very busy people, they're not as active on social media as one would expect. And we found we often have to take them on that journey of how to engage on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and the various platforms that are out there, because they don't tend to do it that often. There are among them people who are running their own businesses and who are very good at building themselves up as experts within industry and within their own field. So they obviously, through their blogging, are teaching others how they can do it. And what we've also done is we have a service on MBA Connect. It's essentially a featured member service, which helps them elevate their personal brand by piggybacking on our high search engine rankings, creating their own unique web page with a professionally done profile. So it's almost like a write-up that's been done, an article on them, but their CV has been done in the form of an article. And that we help elevate their personal brand, because that's the first thing that Google will find when people type in their name in Google and look for that particular person. So giving them the edge in the job market over other people who don't have something like that. And these are some of the tools that we're creating to help make our community better equipped to get the best benefits out of social media.
Doug, I think Colette has hit on something there. You've got this thing of either being too busy to be on social media or not on enough. How do you find that balance?
Well, you do have to take it seriously. It has to become a disciplined part of your marketing approach. And in fact, building on something Colette mentioned there, or sort of alluded to in terms of writing your CV as an article, there's also a large degree to which you want to build entertainment into your messages. The drier it is, the less people respond to it. And perhaps a simple analogy for that one is, I often ask audiences, name the world's number one car show. And only one show comes to mind, and of course that's Top Gear. It's a worldwide phenomenon. And if you think about it, the Top Gear formula is really just entertainment. They are masters at taking otherwise dry information and turning it into stories and humor and scenarios. And that sort of thing works incredibly well on social media. So it's a case of giving value, as I said earlier, but doing it in ways that really engages with the human imagination.
Gavin, I think I've maybe saved the best for last in some respect, just because the subject intrigues me. You're talking on the subject of how to build the next big blockbuster product. How do you do that? Is there a formula to it? I mean, you've got entrepreneurs out there constantly trying to work out what I'm going to do to stand out from my competition. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think a lot of people think that coming up with new product ideas is a creative process. You need to leave that to the creative people. In reality, there are structured approaches that you can take that improve the chances of coming up with that blockbuster product and make it much more likely that you're going to come up with something, even though you're not necessarily labeling yourself as a creative person.
You were talking a bit off air about some of the strategies you would look to taking these steps to creating this blockbuster product. Thoughts on what you'd be telling an audience?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize that the traditional methods don't really work that well. So typically companies will use brainstorming, they'll use focus groups, they'll use traditional market research in order to uncover the needs of the market, to understand the customers, what they want. That's very good at doing incremental innovation, but not very good at coming up with new blockbuster product ideas that take the market by storm. So if you want to actually come up with something different, you need a different approach. And there's a couple of different things that you can do in order to facilitate that process. So should I take you through some of the ideas? So for example, one of the things that very few companies do is actually look at how people are using their product, actually immersing themselves in the customer's world and observing how they're using it, why they're using it that way, not asking them how they would improve it, because you usually get fairly useless results from that, but rather watching them using it themselves and giving you the insights that you need. Also related is how they are abusing your product, which is a different take on things. A good example of this is Viagra, in fact, which was originally developed as a treatment for hypertension and heart disease. It didn't work very well in terms of treating that, but when they asked the clinical trial respondents to give the medication back, they were very reluctant to. And obviously the reason is because it didn't help their heart disease, but it did wonders for their sex life. And that's how they actually uncovered that this is actually meeting a completely different need, completely different market, and became one of the biggest blockbuster products of all time, probably. Other ideas is to actually start with the product itself. So don't ask consumers, don't look at their needs, but break down the product into its actual components, and then work with those components through various operations. So, for example, you can do the subtraction technique, where you take one of the particular components and you take it away. Usually it's a component that's fundamental to the actual product, and see what results. Who would that product be useful for? Is there a niche that it actually meets the needs of? So, for example, you could take a bicycle. One of the key fundamental components of a bicycle would be the wheels. Take away the wheels and it looks like a pretty useless product. Who would ride a bicycle that doesn't actually allow you to go from A to B? Of course, not everyone uses a bicycle for that reason. Some people use it for the exercise. So if you say to people, well, you've got a bicycle that doesn't have wheels, if they can still get the benefit of the exercise, but without having to brave the elements and go outdoors at 6 in the morning, you've actually got a product that works. And that's what an exercise bicycle is about. So it's about taking products and adapting them, removing components, and seeing what results, and seeing how the actual product now meets the need rather than the other way around. And then finally, a really effective technique is copying and adapting. So that's looking at what your problem is, looking at other industries that have got the same problem, and seeing how they have solved the problem and how you can adapt that solution in order to solve your particular problem. So a good example of this is, in fact, the company that I run, Get a Great Boss, where we use technology to enable workplace conversations that would never happen face-to-face. Now, usually employees are very reluctant to give their manager feedback face-to-face because they don't know how the boss is going to react. It's a very risky conversation. And so the problem would be, how would you enable that to occur while still giving people the safety? Look for an industry that's got a similar problem. How have they solved it? Probably the best example of this would be the church, in fact, with a confessional booth, where here you've got members of the congregation who would feel very awkward sitting face to face with a priest and saying what they've done wrong, because it's embarrassing, it's awkward. So how they solved it, they put up a confessional booth, which is they put up a screen between the priest and the congregant, which effectively anonymizes their feedback but still allows a two-way interaction to take place, and it solves their problem quite effectively. So can you take that and adapt it for your particular situation? Can you adapt it in the workplace? And that's fairly simple to do. So what you do is, instead of having a confessional screen, you have a computer screen. And instead of having an actual conversation that takes place, you can have a text conversation that takes place between the manager and the employee, where you've effectively anonymized the employee by allowing him to create a pseudonym and interact through your system, but still have that interactive two-way conversation with the manager, in which case he gets the feedback that he needs, but you're protecting the employee at the same time and avoiding the need for an awkward conversation that wouldn't happen face-to-face.
Excellent. Looks like we're running out of short time here. David, maybe just before we sign off, having looked at the market in South Africa in general, any particular industries that jump out at you that you really think are going to be exciting for South African entrepreneurs in the next 5 years?
It's a very tough question you're asking me. And I say that because I think we're going to be driven by resources. I know it's old-fashioned. It's digging things in the ground and pulling them up and converting them into something which you send overseas. But it's still going to be what drives this economy over the next 5 years. And I think that just listening to the various conversations, and I've got a wonderful example that I'm going to share in the next 2 weeks, of how things are changing so dramatically, something that we're doing here at the moment, which is pointing the way forward. And I'm doing something, even though I'm a man over 60 now, I'm doing something that is just so innovative and so great that it's changed the whole way that I look at business. But I think that the one thing that I have to add, Mark, is that you can't focus locally. We are such an open economy that anything you do has to be competitive in a global environment, because I promise you, if you think it's going to be focused on the local economy, and maybe music and some entertainment might be, but I think generally every product is subject to some kind of competition in a global environment. Somewhere in the rest of the world, someone's thinking the same way and doing the same thing as well.
Excellent. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Colette, where can they find out more information about this event?
We can. If you go to www.mbaconnect.net, you'll be able to see a lot more about the actual site. If you'd like to find out specifically about this event, you're welcome to contact me on email Colette, C-O-L-E-T-T-E, at mbaconnect.net.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much to all our guests. Much appreciated. And tune in next week for the next of the Entrepreneurs Podcasts.